We're here because we don't buy into the bullshit of mainstream culture. We're tired of the mundane, passionless careers we've been shuffled into as a result of this orchestrated debt-based system of rule, and the stranglehold on education and entertainment by cold, soulless corporations. People, yes, we are frustrated. Yes, we are tired. And we reject the pre-approved tranquilizers that are Monday Night Football and an ice-cold Budweiser. But we have to stop hiding. Stop hiding behind the headphones and the Cherry Popper 420 username. Let the world see that the resistance is strong and society is changing. There was a time to be anonymous, but that time has passed. And so the Higher Side Chats would like to present Conspiracies as the dawning of this new paradigm in the uniform of the revolution. Because bold fashion should mean more than some celebrity meat dresser frat boy in a silly pink polo. Conspiracies redefines bold fashion as having the balls to reject socially uncomfortable and unpopular truths from your radiant chest all fucking day. Conspiracies.net. Let them know that you know. Bold designs for troubled times. Hard truths. Soft cock.
In the 1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of fire. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Higher Side Chats.
Hello again, Higher Side Chatters from San Diego, drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke. I'm Greg Carlwood, the Pillar of Health. And let me tell you, people, lately I've been feeling a bit hypocritical, because I'll debate the potential damages of chemtrails, vaccines, and body scanners, but I'll turn around and eat fast food 7 days a week. I'll complain about fluoride in the tap water, but I'll slam an energy drink every morning before I go into work. I preach about the evils of Monsanto and the risk of genetically modified crops when nothing I eat on a daily basis resembles a fucking crop. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to stop playing the blame game and let's ask ourselves, is the New World Order really doing any more harm to us than we're doing to ourselves? Because I think some of us have been making excuses for far too long, and today's guest, Dr. Matt Mumber, is tired of our shit. Dr. Mumber is a practicing radiation oncologist and the past president of the Georgia Society of Clinical Oncology, and with his co-author, yoga instructor Heather Reed, they have written Sustainable Wellness, an Integrative Approach to Transform Your Mind, Body, and Spirit. Dr. Mumber, how are you?
Doing well.
Well, I could say I was doing well, but we both know I'm lying after that intro. and so, you know, as... you know, I usually focus on conspiracy and the paranormal, but I get some of my guests from New Page Books, and when they told me about sustainable wellness, I thought it might be a good positive change of pace. So why don't you tell the people a bit about your medical background and Ms. Reed's background and how you two came together to write this book?
Well, I was formally trained as a physician at the University of Virginia and then did my radiation oncology training at Wake Forest in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And throughout my whole career, I've always been interested and thought that medicine should really approach not just the person and the disease that person has, but also look at the whole person, not just look at the illness, but look at the person's mental, emotional status, their physical status outside of the disease, what's going on with things like their nutrition and their ability to be active, and use all forms of therapy that are available, not just the kind of more traditional, conventional therapies. And so I did a fellowship after I was out practicing as a radiation oncologist, did a fellowship with Dr. Andrew Weil at the University of Arizona, the program for integrative medicine. And in that program, really found a good number of other physicians that felt the same way that I did. And very fortunate at that time to be one of the first oncologists to go through that type of program, and actually wrote an academic textbook after getting out of it called Integrative Oncology Principles and Practice. And it basically examined ways to integrate different modalities into the cancer care process. So as a part of that training, I went to a group in California called Common Wheel, And Commonweal at that time had made a name for itself on Bill Moyer's healing in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found was that they would put people through these week-long retreats, and they sometimes would have remarkable changes in their health status. So cancer would regress, their ability to get up and around would change tremendously. And that really showed the link between that type of approach and the mind-body interaction and how it could have an effect on disease and illness and health. And so I went out there to learn how to run these retreats and groups for my cancer patients as well as for physicians in order to help physicians stay connected to their calling to serve people as a part of the medical profession. So once I did that, the yoga instructor at Commonweal actually knew Heather, had taught Heather, and Heather, back at that time, lived near the Atlanta area, which is near where I lived, in Rome, Georgia, which is northwest of Atlanta. And so the two of us hooked up and started running these retreats, and gradually that melded into doing group sessions that went over 8-week periods of time, and over time the folks that came to both the retreats and the groups kept saying, gosh, would you please, you know, put something out so that we can have something to take with us after these retreats and groups so that we can sustain this practice. And so that's how the book came about.
Nice. Well, let me ask you, these retreats, I've heard about stuff similar before. It seems pretty miraculous to think that, you know, cancer would regress. That's something that's a huge concern probably to anyone in their 20s and 30s right now. It's kind of like spinning the wheel on which type you're going to get, because something's going to happen. It just seems like it's so rampant. But what are they doing differently on these retreats specifically that, you know, almost seems to surpass the results of chemotherapy?
Well, I think it's a matter of, from a standpoint of surpassing the results of conventional therapies, chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery are the kind of big three conventional therapies, and we're not trying to get rid of those. You know, one of my favorite books is by a guy named Ken Wilber, and he wrote a book called A Brief History of Everything,
mm-hmm.
and in that book, he defines what integrative systems really need to look like, and an integrative system is a whole system, and so what it does is it both transcends the old processes as well as includes them. So an integrative medicine approach will transcend the use of only chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery, which are pretty much just delivered downhill to an individual, and it still includes them, but it goes beyond that to actually enlist all of the healing capacities of the individual. So the individual becomes more important than the tool. And when the individual becomes more important than the tool, then there are a ton of tools that are out there that really take the individual to actually apply them in order for them to work. And so that's what these retreats, I think, do. First of all, the number one first ingredient in any kind of retreat or group that we do, and really the first step that we focus on in the book, is learning how to stop. And as a good red-blooded American physician that is type A and grew up wanting to score high on my SATs and make it through high school and do good on my MCATs and get out and get a good residency and, you know, make a living and all the stuff that we all kind of strive to, I was never taught to stop. And so learning how to stop is a really vital part, because when someone learns how to stop, all of a sudden they can learn how to be calm. Again, something that is a lot of times things that we look to externals to calm us. Whatever those externals might be, whether they be watching television or substances or lifestyle types of habits. So instead of having something external calm us, being able to actually stop and calm ourselves in and of ourselves, and then when we're able to stop and calm, all of a sudden we're able to be at rest. And that is a huge ingredient when we're approaching the work of healing. And this is another word that used to freak me out, the word healing,
mm-hmm.
Because I always thought of that when I was in medical school. I kind of thought of it as being secondary to curing, you know, like healing is kind of, well, you know, what does that mean exactly? And people throw the word around a lot, like, you know, heal the world, and oh, it's such a healing practice, and so forth. And so it's got this flowery kind of connotation, it always did for me. And then I read a book by a guy named Stephen Levine. He was an individual who liked to work with people when they're in the death and dying situation.
Wow.
And he was an incredibly thoughtful individual. And so he said, you know, really the only way I'm going to get a better feel for how to serve this type of person is to go through the experience myself. And, of course, he wanted to still be alive afterwards.
And so
he said, well, okay, I'm just going to – he had a wife that worked with him to do a lot of this stuff, and she's wonderful as well. And so they said, okay, we're going to die. Today is November 15th. Next November 15th is the death date. And so we're going to actually live consciously over the next year, thinking we just have 1 year to live. Because that's kind of, you hear that a lot, well, you've got a year to live.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so he did that, and then he wrote a book that's appropriately named A Year to Live, and it's an awesome book. I would highly recommend it to anybody. And so in the first part of that book, I was reading along, and all of a sudden this sentence just struck me kind of right between the eyes, you know, and it basically said, if there is a single definition of healing, it is to look with mercy and awareness at those pains, both mental and physical, that we have dismissed in judgment and dismay. And I was like,
that's heavy.
Wow, that is heavy. Yeah, it is. And that's difficult work. There's nothing flowery about that. And so isn't it better? It struck me as well. Isn't it better? And isn't it even necessary to do that kind of work in a place where we're rested? And so how do we get rested? By learning how to stop, by learning how to calm, by learning how to rest, and still have all of our faculties about us so we can do work that before we just said, you know what, I'd rather not deal with that. I'd rather just put it under the rug, put it in the closet, leave it somewhere, and it'll take care of itself. And so what I've seen is through that process, and my hypothesis as to why these types of retreats, this type of work is able to basically help to guide people and help people to find things inside of themselves that they never knew were there and to make changes that they never thought they could, is because what happens when we're able to stop and calm and rest and do that sometimes difficult work of healing, all of a sudden that all the energy we had to use, the kind of resistance we had to keep up, those blocks that we had to place to different experiences, to different parts of our past or our life, or just even things that reminded of us that, all of a sudden a new perspective can take place, and that all that energy can be freed up. And so a wonderful quote I love that kind of sums it up is that the greatest journey is not to see distant vistas. The greatest journey is to see things with new eyes. And that's what this type of work brings. It brings a ability to look at your own life, to look at your own situation, to look at the past, to look towards the future, and to actually be right here, right now, while you're doing that, and to see it all as though you never saw it before. So that type of approach, that building and cultivating awareness approach, is a unbelievable ingredient. It's the number one ingredient to healing, to the work of healing. And healing is very powerful.
Right. I mean, there's so little emphasis on any type of real prevention or real healthy living. It's just kind of like, you know, let the chips fall where they may, and then we probably got something that'll make you feel a little bit better. But it's hard to learn to stop because there's no money in that. We don't get paid to stop. It seems like this book and this program, because it extends beyond the book, is an integrative approach, but it seems like it would take a lot of time. How can we better integrate this type of lifestyle into the 9-to-5 corporate framework that a lot of us are dealing with?
That's a wonderful question, and we hear that all the time. And I live that myself. You know, I get up in the morning. I'm, you know, go treat, take care of my cancer patients. I do radiation. I've been doing that now for about 20 years. And no system is practical unless it actually can function in the day-to-day world. And so the key to integrating this, you know, because I think you hit on two different pieces there, that this is a book that talks about an integrative approach. So the integrative approach is one that can combine lots of different tools, and we know that those tools can work and work in specific individuals, but unless you can integrate it into your life, unless it can be integrated, then it really doesn't work, does it? So sure. So the key in my mind is thinking about this from the standpoint of first cultivating awareness. That's really the first step in this type of approach. And cultivating awareness doesn't take an hour sitting on a cushion or 30 minutes or 15 minutes or 10 minutes or even 5 minutes or one. It just takes one moment. And that moment is the only moment that you can be alive, and that moment just happens to be right now. And so the key is finding a way to bring yourself to right here and right now, such that you're not constantly ruminating about the past or you're not constantly planning for the future, just that you're right here and right now, even if it's just for one single moment. And so one tool that I really like to use for that is to focus on what's going on in the body for that one moment. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of different ways you can do that. My favorite way of doing it is to focus on my breath, because I know my breath can only exist right here. It can't mm-hmm. exist. I can't experience it in the past. I can't experience it in the future. I can only experience it right now. And I know it's going to be with me. And it's been with me since the second I was born. It'll be with me till the second that I die. And so any time that I want to, any moment, even for a single breath, which takes a few seconds to breathe in and breathe out, I can bring my attention to this present moment. And all of a sudden, when I bring my attention to this present moment, it's a lot easier to then be with whatever's going on. That gives me that little teeny practice of being able to just stop. You know, stop the momentum of the day, stop the momentum of my thoughts or my concerns or my worries or my fears, mm-hmm. and just be right here, right now. So there are practical tools that you can use to do that. And for me, the most important one is being able to stop and focus on my breath.
Hmm. It seems like, a way to start getting into the mindset of meditation, really.
No, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's another thing that's just completely foreign to me. And I blame not having the time, but that's probably just a scapegoat, you know, for laziness.
Well, I don't think it's laziness. I mean, laziness is when you know about something and you don't necessarily do it because you have other thoughts or concerns. But, you know, unfortunately, we aren't taught in our culture to learn how to stop. You know, that's part of our cultural practice. And, you know, most schools don't generally teach children to meditate. You know, we're generally taught to the test.
Mm-hmm. Memorization.
Memorization and regurgitation, that's how we're taught. Finding ways to stop, there's not a course of, you know, stopping 101. And so, so that's really been where I think if you look at the way our culture is moving, if you look at the popularity of, let's say, mindfulness-based stress reduction, which is one of the bigger practices out there to learn how to bring focus to the present moment, that is really catching on tremendously in our culture. And I think it's because there's been this lack of emphasis on learning how to stop, this constant kind of striving forward. So there's some great resources out there concerning how to do it. Our book presents some really very practical, simple tools we call yoga bits. Heather mm-hmm. Came up with that term and uses it in class and in her teaching to just represent simple things that you can do during the day. Like she talks about a practice where another thing that most folks have is our hands, right? So we can, mm-hmm. instead of just focusing on the breath coming in and coming out, in our belly or at the nose, you can use your hands and just count out and just follow your breath. So counting one breath and then touching the pointer finger, then one breath and touching the middle finger, one breath and touching the ring finger, one breath and touching the pinky, and just going through that progression with both hands. And so, you know, basically most people breathe about 12 times a minute. And so if you do that for eight breaths, then you've got about 45 seconds or so of basically focusing on one thing only. And that one thing is in this present moment. And what happens when you're able to look at that and do that, you kind of build the ability to focus such that the whatever's going on in the moment is not the be-all and end-all. And so it kind of changes the way your brain actually works. It changes the pathways by which your brain processes information.
Well, let me ask you, outside of learning to stop, I mean, since you do have a pretty traditional medical background and education, you know, where else do you think it is that the American philosophy to medicine and health is missing the mark?
Well, I think ultimately the way it's evolving over time, you know, it's evolved from something that's very technology and procedure focused to being more relationship centered, so that again, the physician is not the the main purveyor of something, trying to fix what's broken or trying to help somebody that's weaker. It's more of a partnership where we're trying to serve. And so service can only take place on the level of a shared humanity. And I think medicine is moving toward that. Medicine is also moving toward including things that are as simple as what we eat, how we move, how we manage stress in our life, how we look at what we're ultimately concerned about, which that's what we call our spirituality, what's our ultimate concern. And so then also looking at kind of what assets the person with the illness or the patient brings to the table. Just that word patient is a good example of how the relationship is already set up. The word patient comes from a Latin word that means submissive sufferer. And so we're already kind of set up to be... Yeah, and so in order to really move medicine forward, and as medicine does move forward, what we're seeing is that people are not submissively suffering anymore. They're becoming responsible participants in their care, and that's the next step. That's the next whole level. We're not going to get rid of the technologies and procedures because they're good. I mean, those are good things. We can use those. But we're going to expand upon it so that that provider, procedure, centric type of field that's focused on healing or helping and fixing moves towards one that's relationship-centered and focused on service.
Since you do have a background in radiation, I've heard from some people who prefer like holistic approaches to cancer, I've heard them describe radiation as a method that just tries to kill the cancer before it kills the host, you know, as kind of saying like it pretty much makes you sick entirely, and it, you know, kind of destroys your body in other ways. And this is just, you know, I'm completely ignorant, so it's hard for me to know who to believe, because everyone has an agenda. The holistic people just want to demonize the conventional, but you seem to toe the line in the middle.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that's, I would say, if you look at the evolution of all these things, the basically 20 years ago, there was kind of like holistic medicine, which was its own little field, more or less, and then there was conventional medicine. And then eventually what happened was there was alternative medicine, and then there was conventional medicine. And then we started saying, well, no, it's not just alternative. There's complementary and alternative medicine, and that had a nice little moniker to it. So anything in medicine that's worth its weight will have a little moniker, you know. So it was called CAM, and all of a sudden people could research CAM. There was a national center, NCAM, National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine through the NCI. And so then complementary alternative medicine kind of became more integrative medicine. So looking at what works, regardless of what it is or where it came from, and then trying to integrate it into the system. And that's really where we are right now. And in that whole trajectory, there's been a lot of these conspiracy theories on both sides, ultimately. There's been the conventional doctors saying that anything that isn't conventional is just pure quackery, you know, that it just doesn't make any sense and it's all just frou-frou, kind of like the way I used to think about the word healing. But when you actually come to and take an objective and clear look at a lot of these complementary and alternative systems, they have value. And ultimately, the way I've figured that out is just by experiencing them myself. So, you know, looking at what it's like to eat a whole food plant-based diet and how I feel, looking at what it's like to experience acupuncture or massage or traditional Chinese medicine, you know, looking at what it's like to practice meditation or different forms of physical activity like yoga or to participate in groups. So all of these things I've kind of done as my own little laboratory, but over time that's getting better. The kind of conspiracy theories on both sides, where the complementary folks will say, well, the establishment doesn't want you to know about these therapies because they're so much better and cheaper and they work better and the other things don't work. And then the other side says, well, that's just a bunch of quackery. What they do doesn't really have any effect. All that's really kind of washing away. And the reason it's washing away is because the people that have the ability to stand up and advocate for themselves are saying, look, you know, I'm important here. What I do is important here. And these therapies work for me. You know, there are some therapies that it might not be possible to do a double-blind randomized trial, but that doesn't make it have any less value. And so so the key is, I think, that there's different levels of evidence that need to be in place for different types of therapy. So for a therapy that is going to have tremendous potential toxicity, like radiation, you know, if we put somebody in a room and we deliver a dose of radiation, it could literally kill them if we deliver a dose of radiation to their whole body, kind of like what would happen at Chernobyl or something like that.
Right.
A whole body dose of radiation can kill you. It'd be really hard to take a dose of saw palmetto that would kill you. And so the risks are different. The benefits are also different. And so radiation can be aimed and targeted at a cancer cell and kill the cancer cell. And if done in the correct way, it can spare normal tissue. Now, different botanicals and other types of complementary approaches, they hit specific targets, but they hit them much more gently. And so the benefit is kind of milder, lighter, more prevention-oriented, more supportive-oriented, and the risk is also significantly lower. And so there are different intentions for different modalities and different risk-benefit ratios for different modalities. And so in order to truly transcend and include, to basically get to a point where we're looking at everything in the world of medicine that works, such that we can address issues that are related to the patient, a patient-centered, relationship-centered approach, we need to take that entire world into account and realize that we have big toolbox, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in that toolbox, there's conventional methods, there's complementary methods, there's alternative systems of care, but none of those are more important than the individual. And all of them can work together.
Well said. You have a line in the book saying, from a cancer prevention standpoint, there's no safe daily amount of alcohol, which is really concerning to me. But that's kind of all you said about it. Why is that? Why is alcohol such a problem? And I haven't heard that it was related to cancer.
Yeah. So alcohol basically has multiple effects through the aerodigestive tract. And it has hormonal effects. Now, people have talked about, for example, red wine, drinking red wine because of the substances in it and how it could potentially help with heart disease and have some potential health benefits. And so the biggest study that's out there is a study that was done in Europe, over 300,000 people, and it looked at trying to define, is there a safe amount of alcohol that people can drink? And ultimately, they were just not able to define that. Now, there is a recent study that's come out since we published our book, or a recent analysis of that study, that said that maybe people that said they were only drinking one drink a day were actually drinking more. And so there could be some reporting bias there. But from a standpoint of, you know, just thinking about, if you think about kind of the way we're taught about nutrition and our culture is with the old food pyramid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the very top of the pyramid are things that we just want to use sparingly, occasionally. And so I would put alcohol at the very top of the pyramid there. I don't think it's something that we should use on a daily basis. It's something that, you know, a drink or two, you know, maybe once a week or once a month is reasonable. But from a pure, if your goal is to prevent illness, to say that you want to drink, you know, a six pack a day is not a cancer prevention type of approach. And so I would put it right up there with tobacco use ultimately.
Yeah, which I've always been against that, which is so strange because I have no other areas of life am I healthy. But I do want to get a bit more into the book, Sustainable Wellness. You heard a bit in the intro, I'm not a healthy man. I thought maybe I could outline what a day is for me objectively, and you could tell me where you think the most beneficial changes could be made.
Okay.
Because even when I wrote this out, I was like, wow, that's pretty bad. And it is because I don't stop. I don't really think about it. It is in the back of my mind that I'm like, okay, tomorrow I'm going to have to work out something different because I can't keep doing this. But yet it's been years. So in all honesty, I wake up for work after about 5 or 6 miserable hours of sleep. I usually feel sick. I'm stuffy. I call it allergies. I smoke some weed. I take a shower. I stop at 7-Eleven on my way to work. Usually get an energy drink, some kind of Danish. Once I finally get a lunch break, I smoke again, and with only 30 minutes, usually go through a drive-thru to get a burger, fries, a soda for sure. I get off work, smoke weed, and after a 9-hour day at the store and an hour commute, I don't have the time or energy for much other than another drive-thru, sadly. Maybe Panda Express or Taco Bell. I come home, smoke some more, have a few beers or mimosas, embrace myself for another day. So what am I not doing right?
Well, I guess I would just, the first thing I would say is, you know, how did you get to the point where you have this lifestyle right now? Is this a lifestyle how did you arrive at this?
Well, I mean, I really feel that, you know, growing up, I always did have to have dinner with my family. You know, that was a big thing. My mom would always cook. But once I got out of the age of having dinner nightly with my family, with my parents, I would just go through a drive-thru with friends. You know, we were living cheap at 16 to 18, probably a little longer than that. And, you know, now it's just that the show has so much I have to dedicate so much time to the show off of work. It's like a second job. So when I am at work, I really am just go, go, go. And I don't have a lot of choices. I know that to really do it right, I would have to probably make myself food well in advance, but I just don't seem to take the time. I think a lot of people are probably in the same boat with me on that one.
Yeah. So what do you do to when you're not working? Because it sounds like it sounds like what you're saying is the work is really kind of what drives you right now. Is that right?
I would say so. I would say it is. And when I'm not there, I feel like I deserve a couple hours of relaxation, so exercise is pretty much off the table as well. It's I think it's a pattern that a lot of people get into. I guess I feel sort of lucky and that I have a high metabolism. I mean, I'm 6'1", I'm 165 pounds, I'm a pretty skinny guy. And if that were to really start changing, I'm sure I'd probably look at it differently. Yeah. But I know I can't be healthy, regardless of what it looks like.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, in your situation, I would obviously I'd need a little more time to sit and talk with you, but just some things that I would just mirror for you are, you know, from a standpoint of kind of the rhythm of your life, it sounds like, you know, it sounds like you're not getting terribly restful sleep.
No.
And then it sounds like you're, so from a standpoint of, I guess let's go through. Let's use our one of the things we use in the book, the three-legged stool of health.
Oh yeah, of course.
And I like that analogy because what we like to talk about is if the stool's out of balance, then or if a stool you're sitting on it is out of balance and just a little out of balance, you don't need big tools. You don't need to replace the leg or anything like that. You just need little tools to put under specific areas to get the thing back in balance.
Yeah.
And so the first step is being able to be aware that it's out of balance. And, what you just did, that little exercise you just did, is an exercise in awareness. And mm-hmm. so that's the first step. You just wrote down, you know, this is my day. And so you're aware enough to know that this is what you're doing.
Yes.
And it sounds like you're also aware enough to say that it's not a terribly balanced relationship with you and your body right now.
No, not at all.
And so then you start looking at the different legs of the three-legged stool, right? Mm-hmm. So physical activity-wise, what kind of physical activity do you do during the day?
Just walk into the car to then drive to work.
Right. So that leg is probably a little out of balance, so might think about, you know, that things might be leaning in that direction. So that's one piece we might want to look at. Then what about from a standpoint of nutrition, you know, from a nutritional standpoint?
Disastrous.
Are you eating a lot of processed foods?
Yes.
Are you eating a lot of animal products? Are you taking in something to help get you up? And then are you taking in something to help get you down? You know what I mean?
100% so all day, every day.
Check, 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 check.
Right.
Okay. And so that leg of the stool is also having a little rickety, you know, could use some focus. And then the third leg of the stool is stress management. So how do you feel like your stress level is?
Oh, pretty through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much unhappy all the time. Trying to get out of the 9-to-5 day job is pretty stressful. Dealing with people all day is very, it gets on my patience.
Yeah. So your work, it sounds like you're not enjoying it that much. Is that correct?
Right. That would be 100% correct. And the only stress management I do, I like to pretend, I like to, I do feel like I have a pretty laid back attitude, but you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that the stress washes off. I think marijuana is really my only, and alcohol are really the only things I do to deal with the daily stress.
Yeah, yeah. And so those two things have potential repercussions, obviously.
Yes.
So they're kind of artificial ups and artificial downs, you know, to a certain extent. So that leg of the stool could use a little addressing. And so from a spirituality perspective, do you have any kind of spiritual connection or spiritual approach that you think about? Or what's the thing in your life, if you were to say, this is like the thing I'm ultimately concerned in my life?
I would say ultimately concerned, a bit of an obsession, is being self-sustaining economically, being able to buy back my freedom from the corporate world. Essentially, that's probably the biggest concern. I think that's why I work myself so hard to try to pull myself out of this. And that adds a lot of stress.
So when you say buy yourself back from the corporate world, what do you mean exactly? Like debt-wise or like...
I'm not in a whole lot of debt, but just I'd like to be able to pay for my life for the average, you know, the average middle-class life with some creative outlet like this show, or I also sell conspiracy t-shirts which are related to the show. And if those two things, if I could make a living doing those two things, and you know, I would say buy back my freedom because I'm not forced to go to anywhere, to some building 8 hours a day, 8-9 hours a day. That's the type of thing I'm talking about.
Yeah. And so right now your work entails you working 8 hours a day in a building, basically?
Yeah, I actually run a video game store, a corporate video game store. I'm there about 50 hours a week.
Okay, okay.
Another poison of sorts, video games.
So, I mean, I think, you know, basically, if you think about each of those areas, then, and say to yourself, okay, first of all, there's no need to like throw everything out and say, okay, I'm just a total mess and we need to change everything all at once. You know, so trying to start off with small incremental changes, I think it can be very helpful. So instead of, for example, instead of the energy drinks, trying to substitute something like green tea. Green tea has lower amounts of caffeine in it. But it's also a very healthy beverage and can give you a little bit of that pick-me-up energy type of a thing.
Yeah, see, that's kind of the thing I'm looking for, some kind of a tip like that, because I can still get that in a 7-Eleven. I can still enjoy that during my work day.
Yeah, and you can buy it at a Kroger. You can buy the tea bags, and that can actually become kind of a stopping practice, one of those little yoga bits where, you know, there's takes time to heat up the water. It takes time to take the tea bag and put it in the cup. It takes time to let it steep. And during that time, instead of just thinking about where am I going, where have I been, what have I got to do, you can just say, okay, let's just sit here and watch as this tea steeps. You know, they say a watch pot never boils, right? And so, instead of watching what's happening with the tea, just watching what's happening in your body, watching how you're breathing and maybe counting your breaths with your hand, that type of thing. So that even that one little change can have multiple different points that it would impact you. It would impact you potentially nutritionally. It would impact you from a standpoint of stress management because it gives you that time to stop. So that's one little kind of neat change that could be helpful. From a
Yeah, that sounds
standpoint
good.
of from a standpoint of physical activity, just trying to even do something as simple as parking further away from the place that you work. You know, most people get real intimidated by saying, you know, exercise, the word exercise. It makes you think you got to go to a gym and do P90X and, you know, then go out and run a marathon and, you know, so forth and so on. And actually, there's some thought that maybe overtaxing yourself with that level of physical activity could potentially, in the long term, put you out of balance as well and more prone to injury and so forth. And so, I'm a big advocate of just the simple act of walking. And so, get yourself a nice pair of sneakers that have decent support, and just walking a total of 20 to 30 minutes a day. It doesn't even have to be all at once. Just trying to add, spice in little pieces of physical activity throughout the day. And so that would be one piece, just trying to walk 20, 30 minutes a day. Even if you had to try to, whichever, some people are morning people, some people are night people, I would more recommend walking either in the morning or during the day than I would trying to wait till nighttime, because at nighttime you're kind of trying to ramp yourself down and get some rest. So physical activity-wise, walking 20 minutes a day. Going back to the nutritional piece, there are trying to get in 50%, let's say starting with 50% of your diet as kind of a whole food plant-based approach. So what does that mean exactly? Ask yourself two questions before you eat half of what you eat. Is it a whole, is it a part from a plant or is it from an animal? If it's from an animal, then it doesn't meet the criteria. If it's from a plant, then ask yourself, is it a part of the plant that's been crushed up and added salt, sugar, et cetera, oil? That's a processed food. And if it's a whole part of the plant, it's the root, the fruit, the stem, the nut, the seeds, the leaves. Try to make, to start out with, 50% of your diet have that, half of your plate have that whole food plant-based source. And just do that for each portion of what you eat. And actually, some of the fast food restaurants nowadays are coming out with more food that are like that. They're not perfect, but for example, McDonald's has a oatmeal now that has fruit and nuts in it. And that's a whole lot different than a whatever, McMuffin, I think,
Yeah,
McMuffin. You know,
McDouble.
so yeah, it's a totally different deal. And so instead of, you know, kind of ramping yourself up during the day and choosing, you know, just try to start out with doing 50% of your nutrition having a plant source.
Man, so you do recommend more of a vegetarian lifestyle?
Yes, I think a whole food plant-based approach is the way I like to think about it. Yep. And there's a lot of, for me, there's a lot of reasons that I started eating like that. It took a lot for me because I kind of was grown up with, you know, like you. I sat down every night with my family and we'd have London broil and some vegetables and, you know, milk. And for me, over time, going through medicine and learning about nutrition, I realized that, and then also learning about just kind of what's going on in the world. I realized, first of all, plants are much more healthy than animal products and certainly way more healthy than processed foods. And I also realized that it takes a lot of natural resources to actually grow animals, to feed them to people as food. And animals themselves produce more harmful gases associated with environmental damage than cars do. And so if we would stop taking all of our plants that we're producing and feeding them the animals that we then feed to humans, we'd be able to feed a lot more humans, and we'd be able to protect the earth a lot more than we are right now. And so all of those factors kind of, for me, played into going and eating more of a whole food, plant-based diet. Now, when Thanksgiving comes around, do I eat a little piece of turkey? Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to. But I'd say 99% of what I do is a whole food, plant-based diet. And the reason I do it, ultimately, are all those reasons, but then I feel better. And so all of these little things that we're talking about, Greg, all these little things, these little steps are things that you can just try for yourself, because it doesn't matter if I sit here and say, oh, well, you know, try green tea instead of any drink, you know, try watching yourself breathe while you're making the tea, try walking 20 minutes a day. When you're stuck at a stoplight, try focusing on your breath. All these are just little teeny tools, but if they don't work for you, then they don't work. finding something that does for you is the most vital thing.
Mm-hmm. And that is tough. I think a lot of people are on sort of a fast food diet because of their jobs. Are there any supplements you would recommend to try to offset a diet like that?
From a standpoint of supplements, we think about them as being complementary to the diet, so they don't replace.
Not counteractive.
Yeah, you can't really, let's say that there are certain companies that make dehydrated vegetable and fruit supplements and say, okay, well, if you just take these pills, then it's just like eating vegetables and fruits, and you can just keep eating the standard American diet and everything will be fine. And ultimately, that's not a good way of looking at it. However, I do think that even with a whole food, plant-based approach, the soils that we're raising our foods in right now are significantly more depleted than they were 100 years ago. And so there are certain vitamins that we just don't get enough of. So I do advocate people take a good multivitamin. You can find a good one on the Dr. Wiles vitaminadvisor.com site. A good multivitamin, and then another supplement that I recommend most folks to take is a good omega-3 fat. We just don't get enough omega-3s in our diet in general, and omega-3s are highly anti-inflammatory. And then the other vitamin that I generally recommend is vitamin D3, which is pretty much one of the bigger vitamins of the day, I guess you might say, and for men and women. And so about 1,000 international units of vitamin D3 are reasonable to take. And vitamin D3 is really more of a hormone. So that's kind of a foundational set of supplements for men. For women, I would also add in calcium citrate. But those are all foundational supplements. Now, there's other things that you can use from the natural world, like botanicals, that instead of, for example, instead of alcohol at night, because one of the things that can happen when you're constantly swinging from one high to one low and trying to kind of manipulate that with things, it's like the equivalent of when we were talking before about chemotherapy or radiation treating with significant damage to normal tissues unless it's very targeted. So the risk-benefit ratio is different for chemotherapy and radiation than it is for complementary approaches. Well, the risk-benefit ratio of alcohol and weed and energy drinks are different than, let's say, drinking a glass of valerian tea at night or chamomile tea at night, which can be very resting and calming, and drinking a glass of green tea in the morning as something that can be somewhat stimulating. There's also a good mushroom extract that can help with in men, especially with energy levels and with potency types of issues. And it's called cordyceps, C-O-R-D-Y-C-E-P-S. And so it's not a psychedelic mushroom.
I am a big Joe Rogan fan, and he, on his podcast, has a sponsor that he's involved with that one of the things they make, nootropics, they call them, you know, one of the things they make is a cordyceps mushroom, system thing.
Yeah, so cordyceps has some immune benefit, but it's more focused on energy and energy metabolism, really. Mm-hmm. And so there are other mushrooms that have significant immune benefits as well. So that's another thing I would think
All right.
about in your situation. You know, trying to ramp up your energy level with things like physical activity. Physical activity, even though you're putting energy out, it resets. You talked before about high metabolism, and what physical activity does is it kind of resets your energy metabolism rate, so you just have more energy throughout the day, as long as you're not, you know, doing it in a balanced and rational way. So all these things tend to conspire together. All these little changes, just like the little changes that you would make if you went to a restaurant and there was a table that was out of kilter, and you'd put a little napkin under one of those legs of the table. Well, another leg might need a little something, but eventually you can figure out a way to balance it out if you pay enough attention and if it's really worth it to you to pay attention to what's going on there. So, so these things, you know, the word health, and you've said several times that you don't feel like you're too healthy.
No.
And ultimately the way I think about health is just a balance between what's going on inside of yourself and what's going on outside of yourself. And so finding that balance for you is going to look different than it's going to look for me with the tools that you're going to use, the approaches that you use, the way that you kind of experience things is going to be different. The way you think of things is going to be different. So,
and I think it's pretty clear that energy drinks and alcohol are worse for someone than, I would say, marijuana usage. But how do you feel about marijuana usage in itself? Like, is that something that should be totally avoided? Because I've heard people say that it does have some kind of cancer-fighting properties.
Yeah, there's a book called Marijuana Gateway to Health that was just recently put out. And I purchased it. I haven't read it yet. But one of my colleagues in integrated medicine, husband wrote it, actually, and it's supposedly an excellent book, and marijuana does have significant medicinal benefit with regards to how it's used. It can, all medicines, the only difference between a medicine and a poison is dose. And so how you use any medicine or anything is going to be related to the dose and the setting. And so, you know, it all depends on what your goals are when you're using anything, basically. So,
fair. Well, tell me a little bit about these group programs that you and Heather do. What sort of results have you seen from people really taking this seriously, you know, and really kicking it into gear? Because it's going to take a lot of work. I mean, I think I'm ready to do it, but what kind of results have you seen? Any inspiring success stories?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, one of the groups are based on this foundation of just safe space, which safe space ultimately means that when we get together in a group, basically, nobody knows better than anybody else what the answer is for any other individual. So and it's confidential. So it's basically a confidential holding of whatever comes up without trying to fix it. And that type of space is vital in order for us to be able to see things with new eyes. Because and the other piece I would say is kind of letting go of those expectations, because the expectations themselves can tend to kind of drag us down and make it harder for us to be patient with ourselves and with the process. And so what I've seen, you know, it varies among individuals, but anytime people ask me this, I usually think of the people that came in and they just looked horrible, and then they leave, and the next, you know, a couple of months afterwards, they'd look like a totally different person. And this is from people that I've seen it, of course, and I can witness it myself, but it's more powerful when people come up to me afterwards that know that person and they say, gosh, they look like, what the heck did you do? You know? and generally the answer is I didn't do anything. And that's the key to the process. The person is the key to the process. And I would say the first piece of what you said was the most important one. And that is that you want to do it. The second piece, I think that it's going to take time, it's going to be hard, and yeah, it's important to dedicate yourself to it, it's important to set aside some time and to give it effort, but usually this type of work, in my mind, it ends up kind of taking on a life of its own. And it doesn't mean it's easy, but it is something that tends to gain momentum. So the first step, obviously, the most important step is to stop. There's a really good story that I like to tell, and it's usually about all these stories are kind of start the same way. There's this enlightened master, and then there's a group of students that are with him, and they're saying, gosh, you know, tell us what it's like. Tell us what we need to do to be enlightened, you know. And the master says, well, okay, I'll talk a little bit about it. So he said there's a group of people, and they're in the back of an airplane, and they've rented this airplane, and it's going across country, and they're playing a card game. And there's the pilot, and then there's this group of people, and they're to be left alone. And the group of people are sitting back there playing the game, and the kicker to this game is that if you lose the game, if you run out of chips in the game, you've got to jump out of the airplane without a parachute. And so the students all say, gosh, wow, that we get it. You know, you really need to value life, or else, gosh, it's just not – that's the most important thing, valuing life. And the master says, well, you know, that's kind of one way of looking at it. But just think for a minute about how engaged in that game those people are going to be.
Right,
And so it's really that paying attention. And that's one of the definitions that this guy Jon Kabat-Zinn gives, who founded mindfulness-based stress reduction practice at the University of Massachusetts. He says that mindfulness is paying attention on purpose, non-judgmentally, to what's going on in the present moment as though your life depended on it. And that as though your life depended on it part, I think is an important part. Because our life does depend on it ultimately, because the only time we can experience our life is right now. And right now is going to suck sometimes. And that's okay. It's okay to be with that, rather than put it aside and say I'll just deal with it later, you know, and let me get on to something that's more preferable, you know. So
sure. We are getting down to it, but I wanted to ask you a couple of questions more about stress. Really, like I know it's a big factor. It's kind of an unseen thing, but it clearly has effects on our health and our well-being. But what are some good stress management tips for today's modern American society?
Well, in the book, we go over a process that's PQRSS. Like I said, everything in medicine has to have initials to have it have some meaning, right? So the P stands for practice, finding a time at least once a day to practice stopping. It can just be for a breath. If you want to extend it, it can be for 20, 30 minutes. It can be spaced throughout the day. But finding time to cultivate an awareness of what's going on right here and right now, that practice. So when we're able to be right here and right now, when we're able to stop, then we're able to question what's going on, right? Mm-hmm. To be inquisitive about it rather than letting the process drive us. There's another really cool story that I like to think of when I think about that, and that is a little kid standing in the middle of a town, and this guy comes up on this beautiful horse, and he's dressed in this princely outfit, and he says, hey, mister, where are you going? And the guy says, I have no idea. Ask the horse. And so that's kind of like what happens with stress, with our mind, with our thoughts, with our anything that's going on that's bringing us stress, is that it kind of has a momentum of its own. So being able to stop and question then allows us to kind of grab the reins ourselves. And when we question, we can then do that first R. We can reframe the situation. We can look at it from a new and different perspective. Mm-hmm. And when we reframe something, instead of reacting based on what we did in the past or what we anticipate is going to happen in the future if we don't do X, Y, Z, we can then choose to do the second R, which is respond. Respond in a way that is going to increase our ability to be balanced rather than responding or reacting in a way that just kind of is a habitual robotic action.
Right.
And then once we do that, go through the practice and the questioning and reframing and responding, that is kind of the easy part. The hard part is the last part, the S part, and that is the surrender part. And again, being a red-blooded American that likes to strive and make my own future, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to make that happen, and da-da-da-da-da, surrendering and realizing that, you know what, I've done my best. I've gone through, I've chosen to respond in this way, and I cannot totally control the outcome. I've got to let it go. And that to me is the most, that's the part where I typically find myself, when I'm out of balance, I find myself trying to control what's going on in the future. And I'd find myself kind of doing a lot of shadow boxing with that controlling side of myself. So, so that's just one, in a nutshell, a process that can be used to help manage stress. There's a lot of great stress management tools. There's, again, focusing on the breath, just learning to stop. There's things like massage, things like, again, all these things are linked, you know, so physical activity can help with stress. Any number of techniques, guided imagery, different forms of meditation, progressive muscle relaxation. Relaxation is a great way to do it. So just kind of alternately tensing and relaxing your muscles, writing down things in a journal, just writing, kind of taking a journal and just freehand writing about a stressful experience or writing about just anything can be very stress reducing. And then again, there are also some botanicals that can help with stress management and stress reduction. So,
and those would be the like the chamomile tea and the valerian root you're talking about?
I think those are two pretty good ones. Yeah.
Yeah, because it just seems so tough, because stress in itself, if someone's under a lot of it, they don't feel like they can take the time to stop, but it is exactly what they need, you know.
Yeah, so it gets to be one of these things where it can become a cycle that, you know, we all tend to live on a plateau, or, you know, for the most part, and then when we fall into illness is usually when we've gone through a cycle where we just keep not paying attention to what's going on,
right,
to when we're out of balance. And if we do that long enough, then we're going to remain out of balance, and ultimately we're going to develop a disease, and then the disease makes you stop. So the question is, can we learn how to find those little imbalances before we have to deal with the fact that we've got a disease that's making us stop?
Right. Well, hey, that about does it for me. Hopefully there's something that people can take away from this, whether it's dealing with the stress or changing your diet. But is there anything else you or Ms. Reed are working on that you'd like to share with the people?
Yeah, we have a website that's sustainablewellnessonline.com, and that's got some good resources on it, some good information. I would recommend that you pick up the book, and you can either read it on your own or start a group of just a couple of friends that you can meet once weekly to go through the 8 steps together. You can ask us questions online. There's a little section that says Ask Dr. Matt and Heather. We're also developing an app that will consist of some of the meditations that are in each part of the group, such that you can, instead of having to read them, you can actually hear Heather and I going through those meditations. So that'd be a nice tool to use from a standpoint of using the book. So those are the main things, I think.
Yeah, well, thanks a bunch, Doc. I mean, I appreciate your time and the education. I do encourage everyone to look at the book. It is, it's a great read. It asks you a lot of questions you have to think about. There's a fun little personality test that, you know, had a different result than I thought I would have. It tells you about, you know, what your main vices are, you know, for your personality or your virtues and your ego fixation. It's pretty cool. It's interesting. So I encourage everyone to check it out. Sustainable Wellness, an Integrative Approach to Transform Your Mind, Body, and Spirit. And make sure you eat your spinach. Is there anything else to add, Matt?
That sounds great, Greg. Thank you so much for talking with me today, and wish you the best of luck.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Let me know how it goes over the next 8 weeks.
All right. I'll do that. Stay well.
You too. Take care.
All right. Bye, Doc. There it is, people. Sustainable Wellness and Health with Dr. Matt Mumber. In other news, thanks for all the support in the podcast awards. We'll know in January if THC is worthy. Also, the fine folks over at Tuck & Toke have reached out to me and the THC audience. The founder of Tuck & Toke, smoking apparatus, came up with a design which is like a hookah hose on the end of an enclosed metal bowl. He was trying to smoke on a ski lift, not easy with gloves and wind, so he created the Tuck & Toke. sort of a fun way to smoke, regardless of if you need to be discreet or not. They were cool enough to send a couple out to me. I've been digging it. They're $15 at Tuck, the letter N, toke.com. And if you use the coupon code HIRESIDE, you'll get $5 off. A cool little $10 piece for the holidays or something for a stocking stuffer. And you're supporting a man's small business, which is important. You know, as always, check out conspiracies.net for all your conspiracy clothing needs. We have a new design, the corporate sheephead. It's very fucking cool. Check it out. Enough from me. Here's a great song to get you started on the path of health and wellness while you reflect on your life. Listen to Let Me Sleep by Night Lightning. Keep your pimp hands strong. Get on your motherfucking wellness chase, and I'll catch you next time, people.
So